Please listen carefully.
I don't even do edibles, so my whole thing is like, I'm chill enough. It's not gonna do anything.
Congrats.
That's fair.
I'm sorry.
I feel like half the time I have a stick up my ass, so.
I made a joke about we didn't exactly win the lottery in this life, but Steph, yes you did. So mentally healthy. We've learned this.
Steph is not depressed.
What's up, sisters? Welcome back to another episode of Everyone and the Sister, their broke and jobless podcast where we review books, movies, and television shows. I'm Christina.
I'm Natasha.
And I'm Stephanie.
And this week, Steph has dug into the BookTube popular tags and pulled out a list of questions about sort of 2023 in books so far. And so this week, we're going to be going through those 13 questions. Each one of us kind of took a couple. And we'll just be talking through a couple of books that fit in those questions. And that's all I've got on that.
I mean, shout out to literally every BookTuber between circa 2016 to 2020. Where the popular, I guess it was marketing. You would do this tag and it's like unpopular opinion tag. This one's like mid-year freakout tag, I think is actually what this one is called.
Unpopular opinion tag was when I realized what you were talking about. Because yeah. That is the one that I'm super just familiar with from years online. Weirdly, never stopped to consider the other tags. Just very familiar with the unpopular opinions one.
I used to watch a lot of these videos. I don't watch them anymore so much. I did watch the one that you sent me, but I did not like that person.
I don't watch that person, but I've just searched the tag to show an example.
I disagreed with every opinion.
I was really glad when you said, like, no, you don't need to watch it, because I started the first 30 seconds and I was like, sometimes you just know something's not your vibe, you know? And yeah, I was like, not for me. But actually, that makes me a question that I feel like maybe only Stephanie will know the answer to.
Wow. Oh.
Is BookTube, has it fallen off? Is this still the primary book recommendations channel?
No. I mean, BookTok has taken it over, but they use the similar...
I've noticed a lot of BookTokers are now also using BookTube. Like, they're doing both, because they're like, longer format.
But I think, like, in YouTube, book reviews are never going to be the most popular thing on YouTube. I don't know why that is, but I just don't think they ever will hit the peak that, like, the beauty YouTube space hit.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So it's like... At the time, I would say BookTok is the most popular, but the problem I find with BookTok is that it's all that you're constantly getting the same books, and I'm like, I'm on here. I should be getting like the more special, but like the ones that are a little niche. Off the way, but it's always Sarah J. Maas. Fourth Wing is really big right now.
I got a pretty niche one the other day, which I will be talking about today.
Sometimes I do, but I feel like, so whenever I'm scrolling and I get the kind of popular ones, and the first thing out of their words is like A Court of Thorns and Roses, and then the next thing is Fourth Wing. I'm like,
and Colleen Hoover.
Fucking so Colleen Hoover. Hoover.
Colleen Hoover.
The number of, I will say, unless it's a self-published author pushing their own book in a reel, everything else I get, so much Sarah J. Maas. And Fourth Wing, the only reason I know about Fourth Wing is fucking Instagram reels.
That's why I picked it up. I keep getting burned by BookTok recommendations, and I don't know any better. I understand why Sarah J. Maas is popular. Like,
yes.
I understand. I actually don't understand why Colleen Hoover is that popular. Because I read her first book and I didn't like her, so I never picked her up again.
You know how we watch Hallmark Christmas movies, and it's like, it's not ironic. We genuinely enjoy them, but there is a little bit of like irony and self-awareness in enjoying them. I think a lot of the people that like Colleen Hoover are the people that watch Lifetime movies where the women are being abused, but are not watching it with irony. You know what I mean? Like, I think that Colleen Hoover has a face for that kind of middle-aged white suburban mom who is maybe going to read one book this year. And if it's that one book, she's going to pick up It All Ends With Us or November 5th, whatever the other one was.
I actually find Colleen Hoover to skew a bit younger, to be honest, but maybe that's just like from what I gathered from reading her.
Well, I think a lot of people are discovering reading for the first time in probably since they were.
I think she just hits, you know how we talked about like there are toxic relationships that people love in fan fiction and it seems to only be appropriate in certain situations. I think people just really enjoy, I don't even know. Like, some of the relationships aren't even toxic. Some of them are just straight up weird and strange and abusive. Yeah. I think people in fiction, you can get away with a lot.
Here's the thing. I know my reading tastes when I was getting into reading again, because I reread stuff from like 2011. And I was like, you know what? I can see where I've come from. And you're maturing. You're the thing, the YA that I liked that I would read again now, that don't hold up. So it's like, you have to start from somewhere. So I get it.
Like, Colleen Hoover has elements of things like that you want. Like, you're like, oh, this cute girl that runs her own little like bookshop, or a cute girl that runs her own little flower shop. And then like she meets a hot doctor, or a doctor with money, or like, it's got like those elements and tropes that you expect from like a romance.
But, like, her other work, I wouldn't even classify it as romance.
So that's my question, and that's why I wonder sometimes, it's like, is it her or is it some of the fans that she has? Because to be fair, one of the only Colleen Hoover books I've read was Verity, which I would argue is not a romance. I'm pretty sure it is marketed as a thriller mystery. It is clearly a thriller mystery. It has the elements of a romance in it, in that there's a romance between this, like, I can't even remember what she does. She's like a nanny or a ghostwriter or something. She's living in this man's house, where a romance between her and this man that she's living with. But kind of the whole way through, there is like this underlying thing of like, is this man low-key a murderer? And then so when they do the reveal at the end of like everything that's been going on, and you figure out exactly what the answer is, it never felt like a romance. But I know that there are people that talk about her books that are maybe on that more mystery thriller, like they are romance. And I just don't know if that's her or if it's the fans.
This might be incorrect, but I think Colleen Hoover is very good at self-marketing. And I think that is a huge part of why she's been successful.
But it makes sense, because she started as self-published.
Yeah, she's been popular for a very long time, even before her biggest books came out. And I think, honestly, self-marketing.
And I will say, she writes really quickly, so she has a big backlist that people can go through.
I will also say, I think of her fan base as actually a little bit older. But I will say that's because the people that I'm getting that are talking about Colleen Hoover books, it's not the book talk side, although I know that there's that element as well. It's the mom influencers that keep fucking popping up on my recommendations, because I like videos of people putting snacks away and making lunches and shit. So I also get a bunch of other mom content. And those white moms fucking love her, okay?
Christina, those mom influencers are my age.
Babe, we're nearing middle age. I'm not saying 50. I'm saying 30s and 40s.
I was thinking like 20s and 30s as young, but maybe I'm incorrect that we're not young. I'm having an existential crisis now. Let's move on.
But just so you know, midlife crisis, it goes anywhere from, I think it's like 35 to 55 or something like that. So
my time's coming in a month.
Yeah.
My time's coming. Time to ice you.
But with that being said, that's not what we're talking about today. What we are talking about today is this fucking book talk tag. So Steph, why don't you take us away? Question number one and your answer to it.
First question. Best book you've read so far this year? We know I reread a lot. So I reread Lanny Taylor's Daughter of Smoke and Bone trilogy. And I was like, so I had read it on audiobook a couple years ago, and I was like, I'm going to buy it. So I bought the paperbacks and I read the whole thing, and I was like, you know what? This series is a 5 in my opinion. And it held up. Some things a little weird, but I'm like, overall, it still held up. It was that in Ninth House were my best books so far.
Is the one that you just mentioned, is that a young adult or is it an adult fantasy?
Yeah, that's why.
Lainey Taylor's also like such a super perfectionist. So I feel like that first trilogy that she wrote, she went hard on those books. So like there's the parts.
Have you never read it, Christina?
No. There's also, I'll be honest with you, there's so many children, daughter, court of books that even when you say it, I'm not sure which series you're talking about.
In her defense, she came first.
And also, it's nothing to do with fairies.
No.
Oh, okay. But I mean, I'm not dislike fairies, but in this instance, Jesus.
I was going to tell you what it's about, but I literally can't spoil it because...
It's when you go into the first book, it's a totally different thing than when you get into the second and third.
Yeah. You know when you're reading something and you're like, this blew up so much more than I ever thought it could be? That is that book in the series. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that one still holds up. Ninth house, obviously, dark so academia, Yale, magic, whatever. So that was good. So then the second question, we're trying to keep this tight. Best sequel you've read so far this year? So I am obsessed with this dystopia romance series by Claire Kent. It's like literally the asteroid hit the UK, but America is still okay.
Of course.
Yeah, so then after that, sun was blocked. The sun is blocked from the debris that killed off a whole country, probably a whole
continent. Oh,
continent? Europe?
Yes. Continent. But also they don't know exactly what happened to everyone else because, again, you lost internet, technology, all that jazz. So it's literally a dystopia romance, and I don't know why I like it so much, but it's good. So there was two sequels, but the one that I read recently, it was a surprise drop. I love when an author just emailed being like, it's out. And I'm like, oh my God, you didn't even promo this at all. Love her. It's Citadel by Claire Kent. So it's like a long running series. There's like probably like five, and it's just people surviving in the worst fucking world imaginable.
Is it a romance as well?
And they're still...
she's described it as a dystopian romance.
Okay, of course.
Eight times so far.
So it's a lot about like you're stuck with people and like due to some circumstances and like
circumstances.
Are you falling in love because you're actually falling in love? Like it's some crazy dynamics come out of these, but she pulls it off.
I know this is not the point, but how do they know America's still there?
Because they are in America.
The UK was destroyed.
Oh, okay. So Europe's destroyed because the sun is blocked out now. Everyone in America is like, wow, that sucks. So, and now we live in a dystopian universe.
So I'm pretty sure it's been a while since I read the first book, but they knew the asteroid was hitting
Europe. I'm on board. I'm on board.
And they were like, we're not going to do anything about this.
Yeah.
How are you going to stop
Armageddon? Send Bruce Willis up. Let's go.
But also, I'm sure when, you know, the American corporations that saw this went, Europe, we could lose that.
It's okay. But, yeah, so it's interesting, like, I'm burping. Disgusting human being. So it's like Virginia mountains. A lot of people have, like, cabins in the woods. But then the latest book took place on, like, the East Coast with the water. So we're traveling a lot of things. It always talks about how, like, dirty they are, and, like, they're like, I love their smell, and I'm like, cannot handle this. I know, because they can't shower. Oh, one aspect of it is that there is the rich people, of course, had a bunker underneath the ground, so they're 100% okay. There's a pool in there. There's a cinema in there. There's a water garden in there. So you're covering a lot of things. They are so quick to read. They're, like, less than 200 words. They're in KU. But you can buy them on Amazon. Love it. So great. I recommend that one. Next one. New release you haven't read yet is The Jasad Heir by Sarah Hashem. It just came out. And it's got your classic, her whole family was killed off. And they don't. And she's the last surviving, kind of like Anastasia, the last surviving part of that family. And I can't remember. So then, obviously, the enemy kingdom heir finds her and sees her doing magic that's forbidden. And I'm assuming they're falling in love, but what do I know? But it looks good. It came out yesterday. So I'm excited to pick that one up. I gotta keep this light. Gotta keep it short. But number one, biggest disappointment, Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because Book Talk hyped this up like it was the second coming, like this is the best book they've ever fucking read. Multiple people said this, and I was like, oh my God, of course. And then I read it, and it's your most basic fantasy YA that I read 10 years ago. And as we talked about earlier, people are discovering reading, so yeah, of course they're gonna love this and think it's the best thing. They described it like the Hunger Games with dragons. It's fine. It's no one should be losing their mind over it. This book is sold out everywhere, and I don't understand.
Let's also be clear too. Like, congrats, they're discovering reading. People also have bad taste. We've discussed this many, many times. Sometimes people just like things that aren't good, and sometimes we are those people. But then sometimes it's others.
I just keep getting burned by book talk wrecks.
I think you have to stop listening to them. At this point, it keeps happening. But, like,
they're good at their job. They're selling me a book. Yeah. They're good at their marketing.
Sometimes it's a hit.
I mean, I haven't hit one yet.
I was going to say, at this point.
But that's my biggest disappointment, Nat.
Well, I will probably talk about biggest disappointment, too, because one of the other questions was, who's your biggest fictional crush? And I am an adult, as we talked about. I am approaching my midlife crisis probably in the next month, so I don't have fictional crushes.
I'd like to add, again, to the point of, like, we say that, right? And, like, people have bad taste. The number of people on fucking book talk, bookstagram, grown woman talking about their fictional boyfriends and they're fucking like 18-year-olds in this like YA, but they have dark hair and an emo vibe. It's just like harrowing to see.
I can love a couple in a book. I can have a pairing that I appreciate and I very much support. I can never support like me. And if it, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like when you're saying, what's my fictional crush? You're like, I'm supporting me with this person. And I'm like, no, never. 100% no. So I'm going to talk about biggest disappointment as you do instead. Yeah. My biggest disappointment from 2023 was Your Driver is Waiting by Priya Guns. It's a queer social satire in the form of the movie Taxi Driver, essentially, like the same format of that. But instead, it's a queer brown rideshare driver, clearly probably Uber or something. She's barely holding it together after her father died at his fast food place job. And really the story is about her. It starts with her basically giving a ride to this white lady named Jolene, who's also a social justice warrior. Of course, her name is Jolene as well. It's very funny. It speaks very correctly about certain things. Like, it talks about like rideshare apps and how much they take advantage of those drivers and stuff like that and how much they don't get paid. And like, they have to basically cover the cost of everything. And I totally, in terms of execution, pretty much on point. My problem with this book is because this is a spoiler for anybody that's going to read this because I have to talk about this. This is what ruined this book for me. So if you don't want a spoiler, skip this part.
Jump ahead like 5 minutes.
Yeah, just jump ahead. Yeah, like a good like 2 minutes pretty much for me to talk about the spoiler. But our main girl, Damani, she commits a lot of insane actions in this book. More than half of them I agree with. I'm like, whatever, do what you need to do. Kill somebody, sure, who cares? She doesn't actually kill anybody, but you know, if she had to, whatever, I support it. She's been through some shit, okay? And people are fucked up. This bitch dates this white girl, Jolene, who's a social justice warrior, and she is completely delusional about this relationship with this white girl. And at first I was like, I get it, you're in love, whatever. After Jolene calls the cops on her friends at the club, and some of them are pretty much about to get deported because of this situation. She breaks into Jolene's home, leaves a message of love, which actually turns out to be a very creepy ass message, rubs her face on all her stuff and shit, and like starts using all her stuff as if it's like a loving gesture, and then like is very confused about why Jolene isn't answering her calls. And I'm like, girl, fucking move on. Like, Damani, baby girl, it's time to move on from this person. This is insane. Like, this is like the one thing I could not support in the book, because I was like, this is absolutely insane.
Sorry, but my question is, if it's in the style of Taxi Driver, then it's exactly what it's supposed to be.
I know, I just hated it.
So, but how is it disappointing? Like, did you not know it was in the style of Taxi Driver?
I didn't, actually. I went in not knowing any of this.
Is this another thing where, like, low-key, it's our fault for never learning anything about a book?
Truly, I went in, no description. I was like, whatever, seems fun.
Yeah, it feels like it might be our fault.
And then I was like, I hate this part of this. I hate this part so much. A, because she's... See, like, the difference between Taxi Driver and this is a brown woman, queer, clearly knows what's right and wrong, knows Jolene is incorrect as a person, and is still doing these things, and I'm just like, what is wrong with you?
Stalking is not a logical thing.
Whatever. Anyway, that was my biggest disappointment. I was very upset by that part. I don't know if I found it triggering or whatever. I was just very annoyed as I was listening to that part, because I was like, this could have been so fucking good.
I just like the idea that you were like, a romance.
I was like, ugh! I hate this. Okay, so my next one, Is most anticipated release for the second half of the year. I think the most obvious one is Fragile Threads of Power by V. Schwab, out September 26th. It's going to be part of the new trilogy in the Shades of Magic universe, which, if you remember, is about like the different Londons, four different Londons, Red London, Grey London, White London, and whatever, Normal London, I don't know. No, whatever, magic, whatever. So we're gonna have our same characters from before: Delilah, Rye, what's the other one? Cal. And then there's gonna be an additional character in White London, and I think there's an addition of a new magical girl with new magical ability who has like a special device, and that's all we know so far. And it's gonna kind of affect the fate of the four worlds once again. I'm very excited for it. I might have to do a reread. I'm a little hesitant about it because I think a lot of authors suffer from this thing where they continue in a world and they should just let it go.
I was about to say it because didn't that book like it ended and it ended well?
It ended very, very well, which is why I'm extremely hesitant. Like, I think there's a lot of authors that suffered from this. Cassandra Clare for sure.
Oh my God.
Pierce Brown 100% suffers from this. He should have ended after three books. I'm sorry. I love him, but he should have ended after three books.
But I think she, if she's not focusing totally on them.
I think if we're focusing on the new girl, but the thing is, like, now the fate is up, like the fate of those four Londons is now in question again. So it's like we're doing the same thing. Anyway, I'm hopeful.
But wouldn't it always, but isn't that true though? Because if you have different worlds at different points in time in their like maturity.
That's true. They are in different like levels, and like there's a new, instead of Holland in charge of White London, it's now somebody new that rises to the top. There's different rebellions that they have to deal with. Anyway, it's a whole thing. We'll see. We'll see.
I think it's not a fair point, though, because this is a problem that TV shows have a lot, where, especially if you start where people are like cops or criminals or stuff like that, and it starts off really simple, but because they just go on too long, because people like them, so they get 14 fucking seasons, they have to keep raising the stakes over and over and over again. And like at a certain point, the stakes don't matter anymore. Like the world can only almost end so many times. People can only almost die so many times. But I do also get that, like, this author has enough, you've written good shit before, that, like, of course you're gonna give it a chance.
Like, she's written a lot, and I think she's taken her time to be away from it too. I'm still hesitant.
An author said, like, you have to give the reader what they need, not what they want. And I think it was her. So I trust her enough, because you know when some people, you do a sequel and you're like focusing on the past characters and like they're not important anymore? Cough, cough, Sarah J. Maas.
Move on.
Number four book. So it's like, I trust her to know what you should be focusing on and what is just like fan service, which some people
But again,
like,
we'll see. I'm with a grain of salt. My other anticipated release for this year, I will talk about it more in my next section, but it's A Queen of Thieves and Chaos, another of the
I was going to be like,
by
K.A.
Tucker. It's the third book in the Fate and Flame series, which I will talk about next for biggest surprise. That third book, by the way, comes out September 5th, so it's quite soon.
This is self-pubbed.
It is self-pubbed.
And you know how I know? Because she is self-pubbed.
So, biggest surprise, obviously, for me was I picked up A Fate of Wrath and Flame, expecting just a standard Fae Realm story. It's the first book in the series. I think I found it on Scribd or something, and I was like, I'm desperate to like listen to any audiobook right now, and I was like, whatever. And I think
And
it
you
just...
didn't have enough in your Libby backlog.
The thing is, I didn't. I didn't have enough of what I wanted. And it's not like I honestly went into this book expecting me to drop it after the first one. Like, I was like, I'm going to try it out. It has an extreme.
I saw bad reviews of this.
Did you see bad reviews? Oh my
God. Yeah, that's why I
saw only good. Like, on Scribd, it has 4.5 stars. Like, it's high for like 500 people, I think, rated it or something. Anyway, it's got the story actually starts different than what I thought it would. It has like the isekai trope, which is like basically where a regular person from the regular world ends up in another world, in another realm, essentially. So it's very common in like Japanese like anime and stuff like that. But
Love that.
So it's got that trope. This is a girl that's like a pickpocketer. She's in New York, and she has like a crime boss. Basically, she works for to help him with heists and stuff like that.
This is not yeah, 100%.
Is it that Loki also the story of Delilah from Darker Shades of Magic?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
She's
except
in one London as a pickpocket. Who
yeah,
owes
but
money
she's a pickpocket rather than
a mob boss.
Oh, does she have a mob boss? I can't remember. Anyway.
There's somebody that she, like, owes money to, and that's why she does this. There's and then an she enemy. Ends up accidentally in a different London.
So, basically, it's... So I clearly love isekai stories is what's happened here about pickpocketers.
I do, too.
She is really good at pickpocketing, but her actual job is working on heists, essentially. She doesn't actually want to do it, but I think there's something to do with her father. He's very ill and he's homeless, and there's like this other aspect to it. But basically, this crime boss gets like fucking slaughtered at the beginning by this other woman who's like, I want to hire you instead. And you don't really know much. You just know that she has some sort of ability or power. And then she basically sends her to do this other heist in a different world. But the first thing that happens at the beginning of the book is she ends up in this other world and she gets caught by this dude that is claiming to be a king that knows her. Because clearly she's ended up in somebody else's body.
Two identities.
Yeah, so she's in her own body, but in a different world, she is somebody else, basically.
Wow, this bumped up to number one on my list.
Yeah.
Just hold on. One question, though. Do they know that there's other
worlds
out there?
Well, they do find out. They talk about this. But what's so crazy is he catches her and he's like, you basically just assassinated a bunch of people. I have to kill you now. You're being executed. And it's like, she goes into this world being like, what the fuck? I thought this was going to be about like gods and fae and whatever. It ends up being something totally different. It's like there is definitely like other creatures and politics and stuff like that. They talk about like caste systems and stuff, which was like very cool.
That cover and that title have ruined
it. Truly
this
book 100%. Does not go into, and like the thing is, I enjoyed the first one. I think I gave it like 4 stars, which I think is a solid rating for this book. The second book is so fucking good. I like zipped through this one. I was like, I'll read the second one, whatever. It was so good. Like the cliffhanger was so good. What they decided to do with different elements of the story were very, very good and reminiscent of like some of like the, it reminded me of some of like the Arab storytelling that I remember. And I was just like, oh, this is so interesting. I have never read Kay Tucker before. And I honestly was looking at her other books and I was like, these are not for me. Like they do not look.
They are 100% not for you.
I love this series. And this is why I cannot wait for the third one, because I anticipate it's going to be very good.
You need a rebrand. She needs a rebrand.
Is this where we get her on the podcast? Because you're being overall glowing, but then you are also a little bit shady about her other books. And so that's
okay,
how,
listen,
that's,
they just do not look like they're for me.
I'm not. The hook we used to get her?
Don't embarrass me again on this podcast.
I've read her other stuff, other romance, and I say hit and miss, but like majority is hit.
I don't do contemporary romance for the most part. It usually doesn't hit well for me.
You just don't like contemporary.
Yes.
I'm defending you. That's not your
except
your
for
genre.
Some of Emily Henry, obviously.
And other but of the many other contemporary romance authors that you do read.
What other authors do I read that are contemporary?
Talia Hibbert?
Okay, she doesn't count.
I like that this is a pre-defense for a joke of a thing that's not going to happen.
People of color do not count. Because they add some different element to the plot. When it's just straight up white people romance in contemporary, I don't care.
I still can't get over how I had been brainwashed against this book based on literally that cover and title. And it's so wrong.
Steph, I went into this book thinking it was like some garbage. Like I was like, oh, I'm gonna expect like a Sarah J. Maas or whatever.
It's been in my library since it debuted. And because I like that author, but it's not what I thought it was going to
be. It's totally anyways. Different than what I thought. And like even like the way they talk about like the romantic part of it, I actually quite enjoyed it. I think they did it with like a lot more care, or she did it with a lot more care than I thought she would have.
She got her contemporary romance roots coming
up. Like there was like elements where I was like, oh, okay, they're gonna try to make this a healthy romance. Like, great, excellent. Like there's like elements of like he clearly loves this person who he thinks is somebody else, and then they kind of like resolve that those issues quite early on. I think there's elements of like what people think of her after she's betrayed a whole country, essentially, because they think she's the assassin.
Whoa.
It's good. I enjoyed it. I'm saying I enjoyed it, but, you know, whatever. That's subjective. It's great for me. Okay, favorite new... Let's move on.
That's such a weird stance to take the conversation we just had about you being like, don't embarrass me. I'm going to say good things about this book so we can get her on the podcast. And then going kind of back on what you were just saying.
It's whatever. Okay. Favorite new authors, debut or new to you, is the next question. I think we talked about this before. I think the most obvious would be Lillian Lark for her monster fucking series, but I have
obviously that's your new favorite obviously. Author for the year. How could anyone guess anything otherwise?
She's amazing, except I clearly didn't like her one other book, so I was like, she can't be my favorite author because of that one other book that I really hated.
But then you only like one other book that she's written then. So you like, so two books, you like
two
one.
Books. Okay. Yeah, so okay. So far. I haven't read the other monster fucking ones because I can't access them on Scribd. Very annoying. It's fine. We'll figure it out later. I'll probably borrow them on Libby or something. So my new favorite debut authors, it's between two of them. They're actually both South Asian authors. The first one is Deepti Kapoor, the author of Age of Vice, which it's very interesting because Age of Vice is a very long family saga is what I would describe it as. I hate family sagas. I cannot read them. But I adored this book. Like, this book is supposed to be very like crime thrillery for sure. That's like the approach it takes in the beginning. It starts in New Delhi in like whatever year and some villages in Uttar Pradesh. It's got some romance in there. There's gangsters, political family ties, betrayal, everything. It's a family saga. Like, it's very much of that. But like, the vibes were very nostalgic. And I mean, like, this is definitely coming from like a South Asian background. I think I connected to this more. Not just like an Indian background, but there was like a grittiness that I enjoyed to it. It talks about like there's like this whole thing about like essentially it's like the same two or three gangs control all of India's politics through like very unexpected channels, obviously. And throughout the book, you kind of figured that out. It follows one main character and his kind of like involvement in all of this as like a person on a lower caste system. And I still think about this book a lot. Like, I don't know what it is. It took me like I think a week to read this book because it is quite long, but there are times where I'll just be sitting there and be like, wow, that book, and I'll be thinking about elements of that book. And that I feel like that's like a very, very rare thing for me to do, especially with like something that would be seen as more like literary, traditional literature that like, you know, white people like about brown people. Which leads me to my second one. It's the author that wrote Seven Moons of Mali Almeida, Shihan Karunatilaka. He's written a few books and I haven't read the others, but this is like the first like really big one that made a splash. I think he won the Booker in 2022 for this book, actually, which makes sense given the content. Again, white people, when they give a person of color an award, it's because they are giving it for the trauma that they're reading. But that is not why I like this book. It's not because of the trauma. This book is actually quite funny and charming. It's a little bit morbid, obviously. It's the story of a ghost, Mali Almeida. He's trapped, basically, living this, like, weird, like, purgatory life as a ghost. And he's navigating the afterlife, basically, and coming to terms with his life and his work as a photographer, a war photographer, essentially. Relationships he's had, his death. It's structured like a whodunit, which I thought was very funny and very like cozy almost, which is like so weird. And he's trying to trace his last steps and figure out whether his murder, because he was murdered, was extremely personal, related to his like family, his relationships, or work related in terms of like his war photography. His memory's kind of like fuzzy around it. And there's like parts of it where he doesn't want to admit certain things to like the ghosts that he's talking to or like the people around him. So they talk about like memories of war, his own ethical dilemmas as a photographer, whether he actually participates in some of the stuff or tries to save people or not, or he just photographs the atrocities that are happening in Sri Lanka. And then there's like his awkward relationship with his mother, his official girlfriend, as well as his secret boyfriend, who is actually maybe dating somebody else as a cover. So it is also a queer story / romance in there, which I found very cute. But it's extremely chaotic because throughout this whole whodunit part of it, Molly's constantly being interrupted by random ass ghosts that are like just chatty old people that have died or dead folks that are just like breezing through his afterlife and are like, what do you do? Like, they're very like, it's very like snarky in a lot of ways and very funny, and I just found it like very, very cute and charming. The book takes place in 1989, the year after I was born. So, you know, significant for me in no way, but like, it's significant in terms of like the author clearly chose a very significant time for Sri Lanka. It's when everything that was happening, there was like a lot of war stuff happening. There was a lot of Indian peacekeepers in Sri Lanka. The army were occupying. The Tigers was like a huge thing. There was like JVP terrorists. So there was like, essentially it was a very like political time, but also people were killing each other at an extremely prolific rate, like murders and kidnappings and like what is it called, like kidnapping for like money and stuff like that was very common. So like this, his death and his family trying to also solve his death was just one of many deaths that were happening at the time. So like it's a fucking mess, like it's chaos. And like the author really told it with like very obviously clearly some personal connections as the author is Sri Lankan as well, but like he told it with such care, and like it was just, for a very depressing book in a lot of ways, it was a delight to read, and I just really liked his style of writing. So I'm definitely gonna be checking out his other books, and he's now my new fave. And the audiobook was excellent, like it was very funny, like the audio person was fun to listen to as well. That's it. Christina, what's yours?
All right, so mine first one up was, oh yeah, so what is your newest favorite character? This one was the easiest one for me because at the beginning of this year was the first time I ever read the Murderbot series, and which is like by Martha Wells. It's a sci-fi series, and the main character is this Murderbot, who is a security unit that is like basically gained sentience away from his programming, and instead of being like going on a murder spree, he's just depressed and he just wants to watch his TV. they just want to watch their TV shows all the time, and they're constantly talking about how they really dislike being surrounded by people and all of the unfortunate elements that come along with having to protect these like meat stacks that don't know how to take care of themselves. And so for various reasons, I just really identified with this character in particular, and like hands down my favorite character. At no point in my life did I ever think that like the character in literature that was really going to speak to me the most was a robot that literally just wants to watch TV all day, and like whenever they can turns off their awareness of everything around them and just watches essentially old shows.
Do not disturb mode.
Literally do not disturb mode, and is going through as many soap operas as possible. Honestly, big identify. Sec unit. There's a couple different names that this character has, but like he goes by Murderbot. They go by Murderbot, and honestly, I support it. I'm with it. That was easily my favorite character of anything that I've read so far this year. Love that. Love that robot. The next one was books that made you cry, and because I'm not the most emotional of people, and then you layer that in with, I don't think there was any book I read this year that also was a book that was like intended to make you cry.
So Murderbot made you cry. No, just kidding.
My choice is actually Murderbot by Martha Wells for all of these, but just different ones. There's like seven books in the series, since they're like most of them are novellas, and I've just picked each one. In this one, because I didn't cry from sadness, I picked a book that I cried from boredom, and that was how to sell a haunted house by Grady Hendrix.
Because this is funny, because in a way you've also picked what's the most disappointing book.
Oh, don't worry, I got something coming up for you soon too. Let me get there. This one isn't even about it being disappointing. This one was about being, why, first of all, how did you flop this concept so hard? But also, it's like 200 pages longer than it needs to be, and I think it's a 300 page book. Like, there's so much in this that I just kept wanting over and over and over for it to end, and it didn't, and that made me sad. And that's probably the saddest a book has made me all year, because it just refused to end. And at one point I was so far in it that I was like, I should just finish it. But even then, I was incorrect with how far in it I was. And I thought I was further along because I thought I reached the ending point. And then it turned out to be, yeah, another
three,
like,
conclusions.
Truly, there was another 8 hours left in the audiobook after the point I thought it was finished. So that, I think, for me, is the book that made me cry the most. And then, hilariously, the next one is the book that made you happy. And I had a couple different ones for this. They're all books we've talked about before. Gwen and Art Are Not in Love by Lex Croucher, who I think Nat has talked about in, like, episodes many, you know, like, quite a few episodes back. And The Bandit Queens by Perini Schroff, which I think I talked about in, like, our Wet Hot Erotic Summer episodes. That was recent. So actually, having felt left out by the book's biggest disappointment of books, I just said, let's scrap the books that made you happy question, and I picked a book that made you the most disappointed. And hilariously, that was not How to Sell a Haunted House, because, like I said, that one was just boring. And I think my expectations for Grady Hendrix are a little bit middling anyway, because he can be great, but he can really fumble the bag on the ending. But How to Kill Your Family by Bella Mackey. Me and Nat were talking about this, because as I got to the end, I started messaging them, just being like, the fuck is going on? This is a really great book about, at the beginning, this is a very great book about an unlikable protagonist who was raised by a single mother after having an absentee father who was, like, a billionaire, like, one of the richest people in the UK, but their entire family does not acknowledge her existence whatsoever. And so as an adult, she goes on a revenge tour and has an elaborate plan to kill absolutely every single member in this family, and eventually end up with all that money for herself. Though her point of view is that the money is, like, a side bonus to the actual benefit, which is killing them for what they've done. Because her mother also passed away, and she's just, like, her revenge against them. Stunning concept. Solid execution. Right up until the last chapter, where all of a sudden a character that has not existed for the entire rest of the book is brought up to tell you how actually this is their story, and just made the whole thing worse, in addition to also being confusing. But it was the biggest disappointment, because literally up until the last chapter of the book, I was like, I'm having a good time with this book. I'm enjoying this. I don't like this character, but I'm happy for her. You know, I wish her all the best, even though she's also super privileged in her own way. Then to bust out, hey, guess what? There's this guy you didn't even know about. He was also an illegitimate child, and he also has his own plans, and also he's even more unlikable than you are. And that was one of the ones that really got you. So I have to say, if you're thinking about picking up this book, I actually think it's worth it, but then stop reading at the last chapter. when the point of view is no longer the main character and they throw in a chapter that's a letter from someone else, stop reading. Don't keep going. You've gotten the best ending you can get from this book. So that's a shame for that one. And then the last actual question.
That's such a weird, like, they did not land.
I truly.
They didn't land their twist.
I was so confused, because I kept being like, what was your goal with this ending? I could almost have lived with it if it then continued on after that path, and there was something.
That's what
between.
I was thinking.
Yeah, it
like there was
off.
A moment where. So the thing is, he doesn't technically come out of the blue. He is there because he's the assistant. But, like, there's a moment where I was like, okay, I thought that they were going to, like, join forces or something. Or do, I don't know. I don't know what I thought, and what I got was not what I wanted. But the thing is, I enjoyed 90% of the book. So I was like, this is so fucking annoying.
It truly, and, like, I will say, too, like, I would say he comes out of the blue, because there is a passing reference to, at one point when the main character is, like, stalking her father, she sees this, like, hairy-looking assistant go in, and she explains what he looks like, and when she explained what he looked like, that to me was like, oh, there's probably another kid out there. So in that sense, I get him, like, not necessarily coming out of left field, but it literally jumps to his perspective, and you finding out that, like, he's been there the whole time. But then the attempts to suggest that he's been there the whole time is like, when you left this club, I asked you for a cigarette. And that's one of those things that, like, kind of only works in a movie where if you're paying close enough attention, you can tell that the same actor was in multiple roles. Kind of hard to pull off in a book. But yeah, it's so annoying. He comes out. His chapter is his letter to her explaining what he's done and why he's done it. And you do. You expect at that point then that the last chapter will be them meeting and one of them is going to win. And it just ends at his letter. It just ends at him telling her, like, yeah, sorry, you're not going to get this money, essentially. And to a certain extent, I've used you and I'm responsible for why you're now not getting blamed for something that you didn't do. Like, there's just this whole elaborate setup to it that is so out of left field, again, for something that was so good. So way to fumble your twist heavily, quite frankly. To a certain degree, you would have a better book if you just didn't bother with a twist.
Yeah, honestly, I was just happy with her killing people.
Yeah, I wanted her to, honestly, I was even, if she had just killed them all and then split the money with the one other, like the woman that married into the family that clearly wasn't meant to be there, and she just split the money with her, I'd have been happy for her. I would have been like, you know what, yeah. I don't think you're going to be any better at having money than they were, but at least I liked your story. She was good enough at killing people, even though sometimes she made choices that I was like, girl, wild. Your fingerprints are all over that. But she was very smart in that, like, the way she took her through murder planning was very well done. She often thought about things. And, like, even when stuff was left a little bit messy, she knew those people wouldn't investigate too hard because they wouldn't want people to know it was a murder.
Yeah.
So that one was a shame. Big disappointment. The next book on this one is, or the next question, sorry, is the most beautiful book you've bought this year. And this one's very funny also because I don't buy a lot of books. So there's only like a handful, but I do have a gorgeous copy signed, thank you Net, of Yellow Face by R.F. Kuang. Oh, yes. And for me, that cover genuinely is one of the most beautiful covers in a while because of its simplicity. Like, in the face of all of these Court of, Wing of, highly elaborate, highly designed, also beautiful covers in their own way, the Yellow Face, bright yellow, and just the two eyes. And, like, mm-hmm. all the intentionality behind that choice. Like, if you bought the hardcover, the jacket is yellow, but the book itself, the actual hardcover, is white. And then when you open it up, the second lining is yellow. And, like, all of that is in reference to, like, the Yellow Face that's happening in the book itself. And Rebecca is one of those authors that, like, is doing that intentionally in the choices and recommendations she makes. Stunning. I really wanted that book on my bookcase, whether it was good or not, because I want those eyes staring out of the glass doors of my bookcase at people that come visit my house.
Plus, wow, can't believe you didn't choose a boyfriend material.
I didn't buy those. You bought those for me.
It's or received. The question.
Oh, I just read the part. Wow. I didn't read the or received part. Okay, so I will also say I got these two gorgeous books for boyfriend material and husband material. I've forgotten this author's name, and I enjoy this author. Alexis Hall, thank you.
Alexis Hall.
Technically, I was supposed to have received these last year, but the service that sent them took a really, really long time, so my birthday present was deeply delayed, and I got these as a gift from Nat, and they are stunning. I can't remember what the name of the service was.
You know, that's a great question. I can't remember either. But
some kind of, like, crate box for books.
Yeah, but the artist is Peaches, obviously, I think, on Instagram.
Yeah, and I will only say, like, the art of the cover of those books is stunning, but actually the real beauty, too, is the edges have, like, a light pattern and color to them. So, like, they're two very, very stunning books, and those now also live with the only two other romance books that I own a physical copy of on my bookshelf. So highly stunning, highly beautiful for those. And those are my choices for it. And then there is one last question that we all decided we would sort of round table. So Steph, what is the book that needs to be read by the end of the year for you?
Obviously, The Hurricane Wars.
We did talk about that in episode, right? Because that happened when we weren't recording, when I was just screaming about Adam Driver's face.
No, we talked in episode.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to read that one. I still haven't been approved for an ARC.
We're waiting.
Please.
Do we just send this episode to...
directly to the author? Be like, hello. Listen, I'm anticipating this.
Just clip.
Who's the publisher? Let's send it to them. Is it Penguin or Harper?
Harper.
It's Harper, yeah.
Send it to Harper, guys. We'll do a whole episode on it. And then that way I can go on a 10-minute rant about I don't get why people think Adam Driver is that attractive.
He's not attractive. That is the point.
I'm never going to get over that fucking cocktail.
What killed me too. Anywho. As I watched that, and I really like that clip, but then you liking it so much more, really dissecting down every microsecond.
God, it's too much for me. I couldn't handle it.
I don't know how you can see clips of him in Marriage Story and still be attracted to it.
I could not watch Marriage Story all the way through, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it sucks.
It was too much. It was too much for me, once again. In a different way, a negative way.
I think the part of my brain that flicks on when he's around is like, oh, he could protect me from bears while we live in a cave. You know what I mean?
This is the same like switch clicking that is happening to those people reading Colleen Hoover going,
I was
this
just
is a
thinking
this is a romance.
Honestly, I can't explain it sometimes. He
scares me.
Absolutely. But he would terrify my enemies, so I'd be okay.
Whenever he's on John Oliver's show and he's like doing like whatever, like remember that bit from that one season?
He's taking it too serious. It's weird. It feels weird.
His personality to me doesn't exist at all.
Like I know he's joking when he's being like trying to pretend to be serious, but like it's also
no.
It was terrifying. I was terrified.
There's a little bit of truth there. That's the thing. There's a little bit of truth there. I see what the thing in your brain that's clicking of like he could protect me. The thing that clicks in my brain when I look at him is that that's a man that one day could murder his spouse and will get away with it.
Mm. You know what's funny? I know you hate me talking about Star Wars because people there's not even fan clips of them together being like charming
because they don't exist. They interact like exactly. 10 minutes in all the three movies. This is a classic case.
I'm talking like promo of them promoting the movie. That also doesn't exist.
He's not,
and I'm
also,
like, that's crazy.
You, he's not that charming of a guy. He doesn't have a lot of personality.
He has no personality. I told
the things.
Why are we talking about Adam Driver?
For more about Adam Driver, go back to our Adam Driver episode of Nah.
We will do a whole episode on Hurricane.
We have an episode dedicated to
Yeah, but we're going to do a whole episode about Hurricane Wars, and I want us to come back to this. I could talk about just this for so long, because it is wild to me that, like, this is where we're at with people, like, love him.
Anyway, what's Stunning. The book that I need to read by?
Yeah, great question.
We're going to pretend that other part was cut out and then we'll dive into mine. I do not need to read anything this year. As we know, I have already completed my goals for the year. However, if I had to choose one, this is actually a TikTok or BookTok pick that came at me, which was very interesting. It's a book by Kimberly Lemming. It's called That Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon, and it's been popping up a few times now. I actually have like the non-reskinned version, so they like redid the cover essentially. It's a beautiful new cover, but I have the original cover on Scribd. It's not as nice, so it was like kind of lower on my list because obviously I judge by a cover, but it looked very funny and cute. And the cover is very fun, but I've been seeing both guys and gals discussing it on TikTok, which is very interesting. That I feel like that's more different than usual. It seems like a very short, like I think 3-hour audiobook on Scribd. Looks like a cozy romantic fantasy about a demon trying to get revenge on a witch, and instead now has a tag along person who saved his life. The author has also written another book called That Time I Got Drunk and Yeeted a Love Potion at a Werewolf, so I have high hopes for this one. And the author is Black, and I think all her main characters, like the main female character love interest, is always Black, which adds like another element of like, I will read this for sure. But yeah, it looks very good. Very short, though.
Stunning. And then for me, I actually have a couple things on this list for various reasons. The first one is Counterfeit by Kristen Chen. The reason that this is on my list is because I have had this book on my list. Oh my God. And this is a good book. Nat in particular highly recommended this book. Quite some time ago. You did. So maybe you were lying then, because you are at this point now notorious for that. I think even when we were recording an episode once, you talked about the way that you do that. Very annoying. But yeah, it's a story of like, there's this Chinese American woman and she's living her life. She's a mom, whatever. She's going through strife and she gets like looped into this world of like, fake Prada, like fake bags, essentially fake Birkins, fake high designer bags. And The reason why I have to read this book by the end of the year is because at this point, I have renewed my loan on this book about 20 times. The very first time I borrowed this book from the library was in 2022. Wow. And I have never once returned it and borrowed it again. I just keep renewing it. And I guess no one else has it on hold. There's enough copies. Mm-hmm. So they just keep letting me. And at a certain point, I just have to fucking finish this book.
It's really short, too.
It's not long. Super short. It's just that, like, I keep picking other things that I, like, I'm in the mood for. And so this keeps going by the wayside. And it'd be one thing if I didn't borrow this book, you know, if I just owned it or whatever, or if I didn't even own it and I would just, I'll pick it up when I want to get to it. It's because I keep renewing this loan that, like, at a certain point, I have to stop pressing this fucking button and just listen to this goddamn book. So that's on there. Another library book is The Jasmine Throne by Tasha Suri. I can't even fully say what this book is about. I picked it up because it was tagged.
That's also on my TBR.
Is it also on yours? I think you should read it. I know Nat read it, said that they liked it. But also, the same thing that I was going through when I started listening to it, I didn't realize how much attention I was going to have to pay. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't in the mood for that kind of book. And I was really annoyed because I could tell it was going to be really good. So I got about like 10% of the way through and I was like, I can't finish this right now. I have
you need
to come
focus.
Back to it.
There's like, yeah. I had to re-listen to it because I was like, oh, I did not understand a single thing I just heard.
Yeah. And it was one of those ones where fully my fault. I borrowed this because I liked the cover and it had the LGBTQ tag on Libby. I was like, oh, good, done. I love a fantasy gay book. And then I didn't realize until I was listening to it, oh, I was strapped in to an incredibly elaborate political system I would need to understand. But I think the biggest one that I cannot wait to read that is not even out yet, or if it is, I think it just came out yesterday, and it's Camp Damascus by Chuck Tingle. And so this appears to be his,
I saw that.
Yes, this appears to be his first non-the coronavirus fucked me in the butt book. Kind of a little bit more of a serious tone.
He wrote Straight. Did you read Straight? That one's also more of a serious book too.
I didn't. I thought this was his first one. Oh, no. Fantastic. I mean, I'll read both of them because the thing that really got me on Camp Damascus and the reason I knew I was going to have to read this, the person that blurbed this book and the first person that mentioned this book that was when it went on my radar was N.K. Jemisin. And so it's her quote that is on this book.
Oh, so it's like serious, serious.
Yeah, and she was the one that was like, guys, it's Chuck Tingle. It's a horror. She was like, this is not really in my realm, but let me tell you something about this book. And I was like, well, now I absolutely have to read this. And I think it came out yesterday. I think that July 18th was its release date. So I don't just want to read that before the end of the year. I want to read that ideally before the end of this month. Like, I'm so excited for this book. So that's probably my picks. I had a couple of them in the can, but I have a lot of things in my to be read that I will probably end up reading other things over.
Just added it to my holds.
Fantastic.
I did read Straight by him literally last week, which is, it's a very, very short audiobook that I read, but it's like basically like a kind of a purge situation where all the straight people kill and like are like murderous. It's like real life basically, but like, it's very fun and like entertaining horror in that sense. But
yeah, that's what I got the vibe of this one. I think the reason it's under Chuck Tingle and not, you know, I'm sure another pen name he could come up with is because it probably has a similar vibe. And to be fair, he's also got the numbers behind that name. But I'm excited for this one.
We know Chuck Tingle is solid. We know Chuck Tingle has a way with words.
That one about he came out after the Oscars. And it was
Leo gets fucked by an Oscar or whatever.
I think so. You know, the man has released some solid work in that backstory.
Oh my god, this is a tour book.
I'm telling you.
That's crazy.
Shook.
The thing is, he's prolific. It's fine. He deserves this.
You know, you write one for them and then you write one for you.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So that is our mid-year freak out tag contribution.
We'll work on it. We'll workshop that.
Maybe
title.
We'll do more of these. Maybe the next episode that we're about to record and that you're about to listen to will also be one of these, but it'll be the unpopular opinions tag.
We should do a Chuck Tingle title for this episode.
For which episode?
This episode.
Oh, the title of this episode. Oh my god. That I didn't know what you meant. Wow. For some reason. Because I was thinking of title like book, not title like the name of this episode.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Great. Sounds good. That's everything from us.
Get back on track.
I'm not even gonna tell us you I'm not even gonna tell people that they can find us places. That's it.
You can find us.
You can.
You're here now. Let's see what we're about to record our third episode today. You're not gonna hear it for another week. Hopefully it's still coherent. You know, we'll see.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Music credit goes to John Zahar, but please listen wallpaper.
Gotta eat my pretzels. Give me some sustenance.
That's great.
I'm still recording in case we find something good to add in at the end.
ASMR.